Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Living on Blockchain. Today, we are speaking to Raymond. He's the co-founder of Kinto. Kinto is a KYC L2, and he had previously founded Babylon Finance, a DeFi protocol that did really well in the bull run. Before that, he's worked at the YC, building products, helping founders. He's also built games and applications for platforms like Moz, Google, Zynga, and he had also founded a platform called NetGamix, a user-generated trivia platform that saw more than 100K MAU. So a little bit more about Kinto. When we hear decentralization and something that is KYC, it seems a little at odds with each other. But Raymond explained this in a very beautiful manner and told us a lot more about his vision for Kinto, and how it wants to offer non-custodial, transparent, permissionless, financial services to the end user. So I'm really excited for you to hear this one. Let's deep dive right in.
Hi, Raymond. Thank you so much for taking out the time to speak to me today. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Can you tell us a little about your background and how you got into Web3?
Thank you. Yeah, I'll try to make it as quick as possible because I've been doing so many things in the last decade. Mm-hmm. My background is as a computer engineer. 14 years ago, I moved from Europe to the US, studied a master's, and then created a gaming company. This was when Facebook and games like Farmville were really popular. So I created a game in the Spanish social network, and I got acquired by Zynga. And then I worked there in the Valley for a couple of years in the game studio. Then I continued working in the Valley for different companies like Google. I also had my own consulting company. And eventually I found myself at Y Combinator. That is where I work with Sam. That is now very popular because it's the the founder of OpenAI and is in the news everywhere lately. And this was a great experience as well. This was around 2016. But since that time, I couldn't think of anything else besides crypto. A lot of things led me to crypto. For example, one of the angles that led me to crypto was when I was in Zynga, Facebook changed the way the monetization work and basically destroyed Zynga revenue because the timeline worked in a different way, and then the revenue plummeted overnight. And then that led you to understand that if you are building on top of a platform that is owned by a company, then you don't control your future. So the idea of building in a credibly neutral and open platform is really important. That is also how the internet started. You could create any website without asking anyone and make it available for everyone in the world. And crypto offers the same potential.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. Yeah, that is something that I think a lot of people who have worked in the early days, of the internet boom, like the second wave, perhaps, they seem to resonate with that. You know, now it's very difficult to actually really put what you are saying or you're thinking online. And earlier that was not the case. And decentralization kind of solves that.
Exactly. Unfortunately, the internet evolved in a way that, websites were really simple, really powerful, but then eventually people wanted to make these applications more powerful. And in order to store data, then these companies like Google, Facebook became like these giants that are hosting all the users' data, and then become bigger and bigger. And then all the applications depend on the data that is living on those data centers. But crypto, I think, is a powerful counter trend that is going to, again, be helpful in breaking and keeping these giant corporations in check. And then it's going to give everyone, every user, power to control their data.
Yeah, that is very important. And it's going to become even more important, I think, moving forward. And this is something which is very difficult. Like, if you get it, you get it. Otherwise, there are people who perhaps for them, this is not really a very high priority. And I would actually come to that because that is something very interesting when, you're starting or you're trying to wear off in a technology where the value proposition perhaps is not always very clear to the end user. How do you, you know, make it more clear. But before that, you know, if you could tell us a little about Kinto and what inspired you to create the first KYC, the L2 chain.
Yeah, as I was mentioning, one of the ideas that brought me to crypto is this idea as a developer of building an open platform.
Right.
The other idea that is what a lot of people used to get into crypto was the idea of money that is independent of the state and that is independent of central governments. Not because we want to live on a world without them, but just in case they don't behave properly, you have a chance. For example, Argentina has been suffering 100% hyperinflation for the last decade, every year, constantly, and the citizens there don't have a choice. So having that freedom is one of the other avenues that drove me into crypto. And in the end, I see it as a really powerful wave that can create a lot of wealth for the world. The same way startups help create a lot of value for the world, I see crypto as a world, as a way of democratizing access to finance and financial investments. And before starting Kinto, I actually created a DeFi protocol on Ethereum that was called Babylon Finance that helped users kind of invest with their friends. For example, you could create an investment club and you could create this investment club and ask your friends to each put $500 and then invest together in something on chain. For example, let's buy Ethereum together, or let's buy this token, or let's lend money in this lending protocol and then borrow it and use it to generate profits for everyone. It was going quite well with the latest cycle in crypto. We got to more than 50 million in deposits, but then another protocol in the ecosystem at the same time, the Terra exploded, the Three Arrows Capital, June 2021, I believe it was. Then another protocol got hacked in the ecosystem. And
right.
then, because some of our users in Babylon decided to invest in this other protocol, 5 million
right.
of our
so
deposits
you suffered
got
as
lost.
Well. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And then that problem created kind of like a bank run on the rest of our deposits. And then we went from 50 million to five. Eventually, all the hack money was recovered. So we gave all the money to their users. But it kind of destroyed our growth and made it really clear that no matter what are the promises of crypto, you know, decentralization, efficiency, security, users are not going to care if they are losing their wealth left and right because of a smart contract hacks or because of a scam, because of rags. So that's the thing that needs to be really buttoned up and needs to come first before offering the unique value prop of crypto. So that's why I'm building Kinto now with security at the forefront to make sure it matches the security of TradFi, and then it can deliver at the next in the things that crypto is really good at, like providing access 24/7, providing greater efficiency and reduced cost.
Wow, okay, that's brilliant. Like, you know, you saw a problem and you set out to solve that particular problem. And I think this is a very pertinent problem to solve in this day and age, especially. I know of so many good founders who, you know, built a DeFi protocol and, you know, a product that worked really well in the bull market. And then unfortunately, because of hacks that were not even their own, you know, they had to really pull down the shutters on it. And, you know, mine is a very similar story as well. Like, we built a platform called Unifarm, a group farming and staking protocol. And it was the first of its kind where you stake one and you, you know, receive the token of multiple native tokens that are there in the same pool. And, you know, we kind of had a similar trajectory. It did well. And then because of all of these other external hacks, which were not our own, it kind of did have a negative impact on us as well.
Yeah, and it's something that comes with the territory when you are working on a new technology. You know, there is a lot of volatility. There is a lot of innovation, but at the same time, the technology needs years to mature. And I think hopefully crypto is going to get there in the next few years, because now it has been a decade since Bitcoin appeared, and then Ethereum a few years. And then the tech is getting slowly better. And soon we will be able to match everything that TradFi can do better and then solve all these pain points.
Right, absolutely. I do believe that there is some more maturity in the market now after all of these cycles, and hopefully the repercussions will not be so far reaching when, you know, there is some isolated incident happening somewhere else in this space. Now, you know, you've mentioned how learnings from Babylon Finance basically inspired you to create Kinto. Can you tell us a little about, you know, Kinto, how is it different from other L2 solutions? especially in terms of its focus on providing a safe and insured access to financial services, which is usually a problem that is faced by a lot of users who are just delving into the space.
Yeah, our main difference between Quinto and other L2s is that we have KYC at the chain level. And what that means is that before being able to send a transaction, every single user needs to go through KYC. Then I understand, you know, I'm a crypto native, and as soon as I tell this line, then everyone automatically gets like an allergic reaction, because it's like, oh, that's not the crypto way. This is just that centralized. That's not the way. But we're doing this in a decentralized way, meaning that we are giving users the chance and to choose which KYC provider they want to use, and they also can choose which providers are available in the network. So let me explain. The first time you visit Quinto, you will be able to pick a KYC provider that you trust. For example, think about providers like Stripe or Plaid or Synapse, and then you go through the KYC process with them. Then anytime you visit a different application on Quinto, you can reuse that KYC. And then if that application requires some private information from you, like your date of birth, the application will ask you, and you and only you can sign a signature and give it to that application that then they will use to get your date of birth. So the user is always in control. Quinto never stored any PII, and we give you the choice of which KYC provider do you trust to store your information. And you will always have to give permission, similar to how Facebook permissions pop-up work. That is like, oh, I want to give this, or I don't want to give that, and so on. But the user is always in charge.
All right, okay. So basically, because the user is in charge, the argument, for having no KYC or, providing a pseudonymous environment for Web3 natives, that gets taken care of. Is that what you're... Okay, all right.
Yeah, exactly. So, and also, many people, in crypto, they want to sacrifice growth in terms of purity, because they say, any centralization is bad. But the problem is, like, I think long-term regulations and governments will catch up to the technology. Maybe 10, 15 years from now, we won't need KYC, because zero-knowledge proofs, you will be able to prove that you're a citizen of the US, citizen of the UK, citizen of India, whatever, without having to actually give them a picture of your passport. But until the regulation and until the governments are able to catch up on the technology, if we want to onboard all the institutions today and we want to grow the pie of crypto and we want to create as much value as possible today, then we need to give a way for financial institutions and regulations to jump onto public blockchains. Because what we don't want is, we don't want these people to create CBDCs. We don't want them to create these private blockchains by JP Morgan and these institutions, because we want to onboard them onto public networks. And Quinto is still settled on Ethereum. It has all the settlement guarantees of Ethereum as a public blockchain. And in Quinto, it's still going to be governed by its users, and it's still decentralized, and it's still permissionless. But it has that rule that every user that wants to enter the network needs to go through KYC.
All right. Okay. Awesome. So right now, your layer 2 solution is open for developers as well as users?
Correct. We haven't launched yet, but developers can start working on it. And actually, this week, we're releasing our launch program.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's going to start on November 27, and users are going to be able to start KYCing onto the network. Then they will be able to create their smart contract wallet. That is another of our differences with other L2s, because we're going to allow users to not have to install MetaMask. We're going to allow users to not have to worry about gas. And using this new technology that is called account abstraction, we're going to be able to offer users the holy grail of crypto, that is non-custodial wallets, meaning that the user is the only one that has access to his funds, but doesn't need to worry about all the intricacies of private keys, gas, MetaMask browser extensions, and so on.
Wow, brilliant. So, initially, obviously, you are working on an L2 solution. There is a bit of a chicken and egg problem, right? How do you reach out to these users, and how do you get these applications that will drive in the users? How are you trying to solve it?
Yeah, the niche that we're focusing on and that we found success at onboarding is RWA protocols. RWA protocols so far have had a hard time growing, you know, protocols like Centrifuge, TrueFi, Goldfinch, because each one of these protocols on mainnet, they had to create their own KYC service, because usually these assets can only be accessed by a certain specific kind of users, you know, in a specific jurisdiction, or whether they're accredited, et cetera, et cetera. And they cannot be composed with other assets because they have different requirements. You know, again, one asset may only be available to US customers, or the one may be available only to Europe, etc. The cool thing about Quinto is, like, once you're inside, all the assets and all the tokens can be composed with all the other assets that belong to the same universe, and they are all already in a KYC environment, so then it's much easier for them to access composability, because composability is in the end what makes DeFi, you know, being able to use access at assets as collateral, then being able to borrow from them. And then the other major headwind for RWA protocols was that institutions were not comfortable deploying capital on mainnet, because, for example, a liquid hedge fund that is risky may want to do things on chain, but an institution that has more strict counterparty requirements is afraid to lend money on Aave because it doesn't know which other people are in that pool, and then they are not comfortable taking that risk. Again, in our chain, absolutely everyone is going to be KYC, and we're also going to run 24/7 AML on everyone, so the institutions can be assured that if they don't want to take counterparty risk, they are not going to.
Right. Wow, wonderful. Okay, so, you know, now that kind of brings me to my next question. You are built on top of, obviously, the Ethereum network using the OP stack. Can you elaborate a little bit more about the OP stack and how it enhances Quinto's capability?
Yeah, great question. Actually, it's really timely because just yesterday we announced that we're switching from the OP stack to Arbitrum.
Wow, okay.
They are both optimistic rollups, meaning that they use a similar technology for the proof of proofs that is different than the CK layer 2s. And we have switched from Optimism to Arbitrum, basically because their tech is a little bit more advanced. Their developer support is really, really, really fast and really, really great. It has been a pleasure working with them. And then Arbitrum has also released this feature where, as an L2, you don't need to publish empty blocks. So it kind of makes your settlement costs cheaper, instead of having to post every second a new transaction on mainnet. You only need to do that when there are transactions that, and when your chain is starting, this is important because you will be able to save quite a bit of Ethereum
money. Okay, wonderful. That is great. So, you know, you've made this switch obviously very consciously. And so as against, if you had to give somebody advice who's building on Ethereum versus on Arbitrum, what would you say to them?
And this is from the point of view of a developer of an application or a developer of a chain?
In terms of, you know, if you're building an application on top of any of these chains, which one would you recommend?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And it depends first on the community, you know, depends on the kind of application that you want to create. For example, Arbitrum is great for applications that are a bit more on the DeGen side and a bit more on crypto purists, you know, things like GMS. Tend to do really well on Arbitrum because there is a lot of community and a lot of hardcore crypto users that are using it every day. Then, if you want the highest security, you should go to Ethereum mainnet. And depending on your use case, if your use case requires really few transactions but really high security, then you should go to Ethereum mainnet. There is a reason why, for example, Lido, STETH is on mainnet, or Aave and Compound, they are still the biggest protocols in Ethereum, and they're still live on mainnet. That said, what L2s allow, they allow a lot more experimentations. So, for example, games, or user applications like Frentech that was built on Base, they are now possible because all these layer twos allow to settle a lot more transactions per second and much cheaper.
Mm.
So when you can send 10x more transactions, 100x more transactions, then a lot more different use cases become available. And Solana is also doing a lot of these use cases in terms of gaming as well. So I think that it's gonna finally become doable for developers to create applications that are able to transact value in seconds and still non-custom, because that's the main problem of the internet, that the internet, you couldn't send value natively, and that's why all these companies like Stripe appear to fill that gap, or PayPal many years ago. But now, thanks to crypto, you can send value natively in seconds and without having to trust intermediaries. So in the end, that's the new thing of crypto, and that unlocks a lot of things from payments in gaming, being able to own your game items, NFTs, artists, then also, of course, investment. And in Quinto, we are 100% focused on financial investments, and there is a lot there, from commodities to real assets. You know, right now, everyone wants treasuries, everyone wants the 5% yield that you can access in money market funds, and that's gonna be one of our launch products. So that's gonna be also another use case. But some of these use cases require regulation and require a strict counterparty, AML requirements. And for the use cases that require this strict compliance requirements, we provide all these tools for developers so they can develop them on Quinto.
Okay. This is very, very interesting. You know, you describe Quinto as basically non-custodial, transparent, permissionless, and governed by the community. So as somebody who's just naturally curious about Web3 and how it works, I would love to understand, how does this design contribute to security and trustworthiness of the platform, especially because there are financial services that are on the platform or going to be on the platform?
Yeah, the best way to think about it is that we have from the start the same security guarantees of Ethereum, Arbitrum, or basically the same as Arbitrum or Optimism as an L2 rollup. Then, because every user has to go through KYC, imagine if you are a hacker and you want to hack one protocol that is on Quinto. Usually, when you want to hack a protocol, you need to send transactions from one or two or three different accounts. In this case, in Quinto, you will first need to steal identities for all the accounts that you need. You will need to do that. And it's something that you don't need to do right now in any other chain. And then after you do that, you need to execute the hack. And then you need to do all this before any of our partners detect that your identity, that one of those identities have been stolen. Because the moment we detect that, that user will be frozen on Quinto. And the moment also that we detect a hack, because we are also working with on-chain monitoring and analysis partners like Chain Analysis and Hypernative. And the moment we detect any hack, governance can freeze the attacker. So in this case, we basically provide the same security as an airport, because first, the way you need to provide your passport, your user ID to be able to come onto the network. And then so in order to do a successful smart contract hack, you need to create the hack. That is really difficult to do, and security is getting better because of the obvious, because of the maturity of the ecosystem, because of the systems that are in place now. And then you also need to steal a real world identity or several of them to make it happen. And some assets, you know, may only be available to accredited investors in the US. So it's not only that you need to steal an identity, you need to steal the identities of accredited investors in this case, to be able to hack a protocol that is only served to accredited investors in the US. Does that make sense?
Hmm. Yeah, I think it does. That is a wonderful way to sort of put it. If you had to explain the security aspect or what Quinto does to, say, a five-year-old, how would you do it in a sentence or two?
Yeah, the best, yeah, five-year-old is, but the way I could put it is that we are creating a new platform for financial applications in the future, so we can replace the banks and all the institutions that that deal with money and are able to help citizens save money, invest money, access money, send it to other people. And that right now in the traditional financial system, they are really, really old because they are like 70, 80 years old, mostly written in COBOL. And, you know, they're only available Monday to Friday. They're only available 9 to 5. So we're creating this new infrastructure that is going to be available 24/7. It's going to be a lot cheaper. It's going to be more secure. And it's basically going to help you access your money faster, send it to other people faster, and being able to invest it to grow it faster as well.
Okay, all right. I think that's a great way to put it and a very easy way to explain, perhaps, to somebody who's starting off or who's not that technically sound. Can you tell me, are you still working on a decentralized asset management protocol as well? Is it separate from Kinto in any way?
It was separate, but I closed it last year one year and a half ago, Babylon Finance was closed. That again, it was also one of the only protocols that were closed, and all the money was returned to token holders because I didn't want to keep the token zombie and just stay there forever. So the treasury of the protocol was shut down and all the value remaining was split to token holders. But asset management is still an area that I think is going to be really, really big in crypto. But I think it's still early because asset management requires the industry and the assets to be mature enough that they can be composed.
Right.
Create indexes. You know, Vanguard was really successful creating indexes for funds and assets because all the assets were already really, really mature. In crypto, it's still a bit early. And most users in crypto right now are degens and they want to use the things themselves. So they don't want to give money to other managers. But soon, when people like my mother, when people like my grandpa get on chain, then they are not going to want to do these things themselves. And once they are on chain, they will require services of money managers. They will require services of people that know how to invest. And then they will delegate their investment decisions. And that's where asset management protocols will come in.
Right. Yeah, wonderful. So before Kinto, you know, you've had a lot of experience and you'd also worked on a user-generated trivia platform. How do you see the evolution of user-generated content and platforms influencing the development of decentralized finance or blockchain-based projects?
Yeah, that's a great question. And lately, it's changing quickly because user-generated content is just soon going to morph also to AI-generated content. So, and you can see also the first signs of this in governance, where you see a lot of governance decisions and governance, even proposals can be written by AI or can be summarized by AI or can be taken action via an AI in order to vote in these decisions. But the user-generated many years ago, it was really time-consuming because a few users create most of the content, and then most users are just consumers, not creators. And then for the content that gets created by users, 90% of it needs to be curated and adapted and watched carefully because there is a lot of the level of quality that you need to uphold to be able to make it digestible is really high. And that's why, you know, companies like Quora, or they require like teams that are really, really large to be able to monitor, manage, and craft this company, or then result incentives like Wikipedia. But then you run into problems like censorship, not maintaining neutrality. So I think crypto is going to help first providing incentives for all these open source projects. So a lot of protocols and companies can be just maintained by their community, and at the same time being able to verify that content is real. And with AI, there's going to be a lot of content thanks to crypto. You will be able to verify that content is authentic or not, because I believe all the content will eventually be signed by your wallet, and then people will be able to verify, okay, this video, this podcast was recorded by Tarusa, and it's not somebody else, and nobody can fake your wallet address, your signature. So that would be a way that AI and crypto and generated content will overlap.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that is the case. I think with the advent of AI, deepfakes, and all kinds of content that is being pushed out via AI, there is nothing wrong with that. But, you know, at times the intent does matter. Actually, most of the time, intent does matter. And I do think that there is going to be an overlap in terms of what decentralized technology brings to the table and how AI is kind of moving forward. So I think that is a very good take. And it's a very pertinent question that everybody should be asking themselves. How can we perhaps make sure that this content is actually been generated by an X person and it's not been generated by AI, or it's not like a fake in some way?
Exactly. And that problem is going to get bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And one question for you. What area of DeFi or crypto are you most interested in at the moment?
At the moment, I think, see, I'm always very interested. It's not so much about the tokens themselves. If I had to look at tokens, then it would have to be like the OGs. Like, you know, I'm interested in Bitcoin. I'm interested in Ethereum. I'm interested in, you know, those tokens, because I know that they've stood this test of time, right? And they are still here to tell the tale, and they are still helping out and developers and creating more. All of these new layers that are coming up, their token launches and the potential launches also is a very exciting prospect for me. But I've never been much of a trader. I'm more like somebody who buys and lets it be. I don't think I have the capability and the nuanced way in which traders like work. But having said that, I truly feel very bullish when a project is solving a real problem and also is able to acquire users, because, you know, it's not always easy to show that to the users, because at times you might be solving a problem which is very real, but the time might not be right, and, you know, you might not be able to acquire users. I firmly believe that if you are building anything or if you are running a business, yeah, you should be, you know, you should be able to acquire users, you should be able to monetize it. Like, that is my take.
Yeah, that's really important. Timing is really important. Being early very is the important. Same as being wrong. Yeah. And what you said, yeah, regarding assets, Lindy, yeah, the assets that have been out the longest, same with gold and silver, there is a reason why people still trust them after thousands of years. It's because they've been around for thousands of years.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little about, now that, you know, we kind of touched upon tokens and adoption, how do you make sure that the users that you are targeting are able to understand the value proposition that you bring to the table via them?
The cool thing about crypto is that crypto versus a traditional web2 company or a SaaS business has a lot more incentives to pull down, because you can use airdrops. You can see, for example, what Blast did in the last week, that has gotten more than 250 million in TVL in a matter of 2 days. And it's the power of incentives, because people want to get early. Because in the previous wave, in Web2, you didn't get anything for being an early user of Facebook. The cool thing in crypto networks and crypto protocols, if you're an early user, you get like shares of the network. So then if the network goes well and you help to create value, then you will also get a part of it. So that's a benefit that crypto has versus traditional company. But as you know, there are so many things going on at the same moment that it's really hard to get attention. In Quinto, one of our main objectives is to create the best launch program ever. And because we have KYC baked in at the chain, I think we can create the most successful airdrop ever, because we can remove farmers. Traditionally, in these crypto networks, whenever there is a new token, people, especially in countries that are still developing, there are farmers that create thousands of accounts just to get as much airdrop as possible, but they are not really adding value to the chain. In our case, because every single user has to go through the KYC, we are civil resistant by nature. Every user can only access our launch program once, and they are not able to create fake accounts, because they need to show their passport, they need to show their user ID. And that also allows us to be able to give more, more power, give more choice to the users that are going to be part of our founding members, and they will receive more benefits for joining our launch program.
Brilliant, brilliant. I think that does create a good value proposition for people to be able to sort of identify why Kinto is going to change the way users interact with Web3 applications. What is the next big milestone for you guys in terms of the platform itself?
Yeah, as I said, our launch program starts next week, but our big milestone is that on February is when the chain will be live on mainnet, and our first products will be live, and our first products will be access to these tokens that will provide you yield, basically a stable coin, but that will give you the 5% of available in US Treasury bills. So you will be able to use these tokens as collateral and being able to lend from them, borrow from them, or even loop them if you wanted to leverage a bit even the yield from Treasuries.
Okay, wonderful. And in terms, so this is more, moving towards perhaps the market space in general, like looking at the market currently, what do you truly believe would be the factors that will pull this market from a bear to a bull run once again?
Yeah, I mean, the boring answer is that probably the 4-year cycles are still in play. The Bitcoin halving usually is the thing that triggers the next bull run. But I think the bull run has already started, or is in the early innings, because you can tell that one good indicator to measure is the amount of stable coins that are in the whole crypto. And in the last couple of weeks, has finally started to go up again after going down week after week for the last 2 years. So now it looks like finally money is starting to come back in. And then usually Bitcoin starts the process, because Bitcoin, because of the halving, creates a scarcity, and that the scarcity drives value up of Bitcoin, and then people get profits from Bitcoin that then maybe deploy on the Ethereum network, then the Ethereum people does the same to other networks, to other tokens, to other protocols, and kind of bootstrap this ecosystem. The main difference is in this cycle is that we're also going to have finally the institutions are coming, that people in crypto have been saying it for many cycles, but the ETF looks like there is a 90% chance that it's going to get approved in January, and that is going to unlock a lot of basically the 401ks and the passive money that everyone, because he's working at a company and their paycheck goes to investments every 2 weeks. And now they have a choice that they are going to be able to put this into Bitcoin or Ethereum if their Ethereum ETF also gets approved. So that's a massive difference. And then that gives legitimacy of the space. BlackRock saying that, and Larry Fink saying that Bitcoin is the time for Bitcoin is right now. It's a huge endorsement, BlackRock being the largest fund manager in the world.
Right. Absolutely. I think those are going to be very big factors to actually drive in the bull run. And as you said, we can see the early signs already, which is wonderful to know, and especially for people who've been toiling hard and they've survived this particular bear market with all of its scams and whatnot. This is long awaited. What is your take on the space in general? Because you are creating an L2. Which niches do you think would do really well in the coming bull run?
Yeah, I think it's usually different every cycle. And the previous one was the DeFi summer, and the yield farming protocols, like Yarn and Compound started with the DeFi summer. I think this cycle, RWAs, is one of the narratives that is getting stronger. Being able to access yield from treasuries. Then another one that is always a few months away is gaming. And I used to be in gaming, and I used to be a hardcore gamer, games like Diablo or StarCraft. And I totally understand the value prop, and gamers do as well, because it's in so many of these games, you spend many hours trying to find these items. And then some of these games, like Diablo, they even have a store where you can sell these items to other players. They have like a marketplace. But in these games, these items then have a fee. You are forced to sell them only through their marketplace. They take a big fee, and then you cannot take the item with you. So it's not really yours. It's just owned by the gaming company. Then games that truly hit it, that become hit games that also adopt crypto, I think will be game changer. The problem so far is that we didn't have good crypto games. We just had like crypto websites that looked a bit like a game. But the moment you have like a really big game that also adds good crypto mechanics, I think that's going to be really powerful, because then it becomes a wall, an universe that is really being built by all the players, and all the players are also the owners of the game, and then they are incentivized to make the game grow, and they can earn money to make the game grow. You see walls like Minecraft or like World of Warcraft, where a lot of people created a lot of time, and there were a lot of secondary stores that created a lot of value. Imagine if they were able to use crypto to transact with all these game items and scenarios, mods, etc. I believe gaming is coming. I don't know exactly if it's going to take 2, 5, 10 years, because as a game studio, is really hard to make a hit game, because either you make it and it's one of the 0.1% of games that are hits, or you almost don't make any money. So it's really hard to create a hit game, and usually you need to develop 10, 20, 50, like Angry Birds. The developers of Angry Birds, I believe it was their 51st game until that was the hit.
No, yes, I do think gaming is going to become, is already big, and it's going to become even more big in the coming months, I think. Now, you know, we've been having such a wonderful conversation. I almost lost track of time, we are almost out of time, as I can see it. I would love to know, like, perhaps a snippet of one interesting anecdote why you've been building, building Kinto, which was a little different from the usual entrepreneurial journey that entrepreneurs have. Any anecdote that you would like to share by building Kinto?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, there is usually this pushback from crypto people against people from finance. You know, and I was in New York this summer talking with some of the largest financial institutions in the world. And I was surprised, because they were actually really knowledgeable of crypto. You know, I was expecting them to be really behind, and it kind of took me by surprise. And I was in an elevator of one of these institutions and talking with my co-founder, and we were talking about one token. I think we were talking about Ethereum probably. And then someone in the elevator replied to us, and we started talking with him, and then it's the person that we actually were having the meeting later. So yeah, that was kind of funny. That is like the institutions are now finally curious about crypto, and it's
right,
not just oh, that's a pet project. Yeah.
That is always interesting to see, right? When things kind of move in a different direction as against how you were expecting, and institutions and these bigger enterprises taking interest in the Web3 tech is always, it does give a sense of validation. Like, no matter how hard we would like to say that, okay, we don't really care about it, because it does create some credibility in the head of the end users as well, right? If some big enterprise is perhaps talking about Web3.
Yeah, and I think it's important to also not have an us versus them. It's going to be a combination of both. You know, we need to give them a way for traditional finance to be able to come onto Web3, because their natural reaction and their natural instinct was to create, you know, private networks. That is also the same natural instinct that companies had in the 2000s. Like, oh, let's build this private internet, but in the end, always public network wins. And the internet won the intranets, and it's the same thing here. So we want to make sure institutions have a path to come on chain that also meets their compliance and counterparty requirements.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're going to support them all the way. And this is wonderful. So now, you know, I would like to ask you something that I ask everybody that comes on the show. You know, you have a rich experience as an entrepreneur, as somebody who's built many products. And you know, you've seen like the upward as well as the downward trajectory, like any other entrepreneur. for the various projects. What advice would you give aspiring entrepreneurs to really start living on blockchain?
Yeah, I think the best advice is just to use it. You know, analysis paralysis in general is a detriment for entrepreneurs. You know, you need to be biased to action, and it's the same for learning. You know, you can buy a book that is going to be outdated, especially in crypto, because everything moves so quickly. So the best way is just you know, get your wallet set up, and you don't need to put. You can just put $10, $20, and start playing on Arbitrum, start playing on Solana, and get interested with the projects. And because the moment you put $5, you're gonna become more interested in it than if you just look at the website. Don't actually touch it, but just say, "Oh yeah, more or less I know." But it's the same. I could encourage people to play with them in, because until you really use them, you don't get the magic moment. Oh, I can send money and it doesn't need to go through the bank. Oh, I can do this and I don't need to write a username and password, because that's another magic moment for people. It's like, oh, finally, I don't need username and password anymore. My credentials are not going to be stolen. That they get stolen all the time, everywhere, by banks, by everyone. That's crypto is going to solve those problems. But you need to be able to use it to be able to get it.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful. Yes, absolutely. So once again, Ramon, thank you so much for taking out the time to speak to me. I think what you're doing with Kinto obviously is going to change the landscape of how people perceive layer twos and how users interact with Web3 applications in general. I, for one, am very excited to try out once, you know, your platform does go live. I'll be happy to sign up to, you know, get like the action of the developer console as well on November 27th, right? That's what you said.
Yes,
is there any correct. Link where users where devs can go or users can go and check it out once it does go live?
Kinto.xyz, and then there is a button there that is join Engen, that is the name of our launch program.
All right, awesome. Okay, so I'm sure to put the link in the description of the episode. It was really wonderful speaking to you. Before we wrap this up, any last thoughts?
No, thank you. This was really fun and time flew by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much and all the best for all the upcoming milestones for Kinto. I, for one, will be rooting hard for you guys.
Thank you.